From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. And okay, let's just go straight to Des Moines, because I know you want to know, I want to know, we all want to know what the heck happened last night with the Iowa Democratic caucuses and that digital breakdown, which means as of this broadcast, there's still no result out of Iowa, leaving Democratic presidential hopefuls to clamor for some momentum as they move to New Hampshire. So, Claymasters in Des Moines, help us out here. Still no result as of this moment in time.
I will help you out the best that I can. The Iowa Democratic Party was using this new smartphone app. Now, my colleague Kate Payne here at Iowa Public Radio and NPR's Miles Parks actually broke the story that they were going to be using this last month. There were cybersecurity concerns. There were concerns about not knowing a whole lot of information about this smartphone app. But the Iowa Democratic Party said, you know, we've got a backup of a backup. We're going to be able to make this thing work. But, you know, they're saying that it wasn't a cybersecurity issue, but just that it was a coding issue. We have something out this morning from the Iowa Democratic Party, the chairman, Troy Price, saying that the party hopes to release the results as soon as possible. But this app is what's causing the headaches on this Tuesday morning.
Oh, my gosh.
More
than
headaches,
the
I guess.
Headaches in Iowa must be. It's like a 10 Advil headache. So, by the way, folks, Clay Masters knows what he's talking about because he's the lead political reporter at Iowa Public Radio and co-host of Iowa Public Radio's podcast, Caucus Land. So, Caucus Land not happy today. Can you just tell us a little bit more then, Clay, about this? I'm seeing reports here that the app, it was never tested statewide, that perhaps Iowa Democratic leaders decided to use this app that was going to be, you know, used to tabulate results from various precincts on the encouragement of the Democratic National Committee. Who thought it was going to be a good idea to use an app that hadn't really been road tested yet in the first voting, you know, most important voting, I should say first voting that people are doing in the Democratic presidential race?
Well, apparently the Iowa Democratic Party did because they went forward with it and these concerns were raised. I mean, we're saying voting when we talk about this, but remember the Iowa caucuses, it's not going in and filling in an oval or yeah, pulling a lever in a voting booth. In the Democratic caucuses, you are going into rooms in gymnasiums. I was at a ballroom at a hotel in a suburb on the north side of Des Moines where people congregate. They align with who they want to be the nominee. If they don't meet a certain threshold, those people have to go find another person. And this year, there were the Iowa Democratic Party, in the name of being more transparent, was releasing three results. They were releasing so everybody would know how much support each candidate got when they walked into the room, what that second alignment looked like, and then the state delegate equivalent, which is how in past caucus cycles, the winner has been named. That was still how the winner was going to be named. But we were hearing that this was going to make the process go quicker. We were going to get these results sooner. Obviously, that didn't happen. And so candidates, you know, spun this victory however they wanted to because the results weren't there and are on to New Hampshire. And they've spent a lot of money in Iowa. They spent a lot of time here as well.
We're going to hear a little bit from what the candidates said in Iowa last night. But Clay, keep putting us in the caucus rooms last night. What were people saying? What was it like when it became pretty evident that these apps weren't sending the information that they were supposed to?
Well, when I left the precinct that I was covering, you know, I walked out to my car and was like, oh, the caucus has happened. You know, was not quite sure what the final result was across the state. And once I got in my car, I talked with an editor and started realizing that we weren't getting results. And like I said, the precinct that I was at went just fine. But we were hearing reports that people couldn't get the smartphone app to work. So then they were trying to make the phone calls so that they could call this information in. We heard from some county chairs that were just frustrated because they were just trying to get their results in. And we're having all kinds of problems, all kinds of chaos.
OK, well, Iowa listeners out there, especially if you caucused last night or if you're a precinct captain, we want to know what you saw. What happened? When did you realize that it all was not going according to plan? Also, voters in other states, especially New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, were you even, you know, did the Iowa result or not result at this point in time? Does it make any difference in terms of how you're going to vote when your primaries come along very quickly. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Okay, Clay, so let's just listen to a little bit of what a couple of the candidates said last night in the midst of the confusion and chaos. Here is Senator Bernie Sanders speaking to supporters as they waited for results in Iowa.
I imagine, have a strong feeling that at some point the results will be announced. And when those results are announced, I have a good feeling we're going to be doing very, very well here in Iowa.
Senator Bernie Sanders. Now, here is former Mayor Pete Buttigieg celebrating the lack of results, or maybe what he knows that others don't know in the Iowa caucuses. Here's Pete Buttigieg.
So we don't know all the results, but we know by the time it's all said and done, Iowa, you have shocked the nation. Because by all indications, we are going on to New Hampshire victorious.
Pete Buttigieg last night in Iowa. Clay, I mean, I presume that the campaigns themselves are doing some kind of tally or have some kind of tally. Does Pete Buttigieg have reason to be as optimistic as he sounded last night?
Well, he was, I mean, the precinct caucus that I was covering, he did quite well in that suburban district. I was hearing some early exit reporting from the Buttigieg campaign, you know, talking to me about how they thought that they were on good footing. And Buttigieg did not really bring up anything about the snafu or much bigger than a snafu, I guess, that was going on with the caucus results. Other candidates like former Vice President Joe Biden, he didn't talk much about the problems that caucus precincts had been reporting. But an attorney with the campaign did send a letter to Iowa party leaders calling for a full explanation before the results are released. So this is getting muddied up by the campaigns because rightfully so. You know, they're wanting to make sure that this was a fair process, and the Democratic Party here in Iowa is saying it is. And so, I mean, this is just turning into something new in itself. Mm. I thought the caucuses were going to be over after last night.
You've been at it for a long time already. So let's just quickly go to David, who's calling from Davenport, Iowa. David, I understand you were a precinct captain last night. So what happened?
Well, we were told during precinct caucus training on Saturday that the app was not working and we should not count on it. And I never successfully downloaded the app or got it working.
Wait, David, who told you that?
The chair of the Democratic Party of Scott County.
Okay.
During precinct training. No one could get it downloaded or working. Nobody.
On Saturday?
On Saturday.
So why were people trying to use it on Monday night?
I have no idea. That's why we went to the call-in number to Des Moines, and that, of course, was the ultimate busy signal. But that's not the big story. The big story is that Bernie Sanders won big. There's absolutely no doubt about it, and Joe Biden was absolutely stomped last night.
How do you know that if we don't actually have the official results?
Well, because I did see a number of results when I turned in the paperwork at the Union Hall for the Scott County Democratic Party. And I've spoken to a number of other precinct captains, and the results that I saw in my precinct were consistent throughout the ones that I've seen. And that is Bernie Sanders way ahead, probably by 9-10 points. Probably Buttigieg was second. Warren was probably third, Klobuchar fourth, and Yang and Biden were fighting it for fifth.
In your county. So David, do precinct captains get to caucus themselves? And
yes.
Did you caucus for Sanders?
I did.
Okay. So,
I just want to say that in my precinct, over half the people showed up were for Bernie Sanders. Over half.
Got it. I just want to circle back to something. So on Saturday, people were being told that this app was not going to work.
Yeah, we were just told so far no one has successfully downloaded and used it.
Okay. David, thank you so much for your call. Clay Masters, what do you think about that?
We were hearing some concerns about the app yesterday. My colleague Kate Payne, who broke the story that they were using this app with Miles Parks last month, she was getting some reports from precinct captains who were having issues with it. But, you know, you're going out to cover something.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard that about Saturday, being told by a county chair, it sounded like, that the app wasn't working. But I mean, obviously, people were trying to call these things in. We're seeing – we have this release from the Iowa Democratic Party that they're still planning on trying to get this out today. But, I mean, this also is getting at a bigger thing here. You know, we have been – well, not we. The state of Iowa, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party here with their Iowa caucuses have been criticized. And they – every 4 years they're
yes.
criticized for not being representative of the rest of the country demographically, for having a system that is – inherently confusing and might disenfranchise certain people who want to show up in caucus. And what has happened tonight is just putting more fuel on that fire, because it is we're getting later and later into the hours of the day and still don't know those results.
I mean, in a sense, I really feel for Iowans right now, because just in the last election cycle in 2016, there was that razor thin margin between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders that held the result for a little while. Then didn't we have something similar in 2012 on the Republican side?
Right. And in 2016, the DNC said, okay, there were some concerns from the Sanders camp, and they said changes need to be made. And the DNC said, Iowa, changes need to be made. And they did these new rule changes in trying to be more transparent with these presidential preference cards that we don't need to get into too much, but people actually having to have a paper trail so that they can do a recount if need be, and to also streamline the process for who you choose in those first and second alignments. And then the numbers that get released that we're waiting for being released today.
Well, Clay Masters, I hope you can finally get some sleep. Maybe on Thursday, the way things are going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll see how Thursday goes. Thanks, Magna.
Clay Masters is lead political reporter at Iowa Public Radio and co-host of the podcast Caucus Land. He joined us today from Des Moines, Iowa. We are talking about the no result so far, Iowa caucuses, and what that means as we push forward, as the nation pushes forward to New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the digital meltdown and caucus chaos that emerged from the Democratic caucuses in Iowa last night, and what impact that's going to have as Democratic presidential hopefuls turn all of their attention towards New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. Let's listen to Vice President Joe Biden speaking to supporters late last night as they still waited for results in Iowa. He said that he was going to push forward with his campaign.
We're going to walk out of here with our share of delegates. We don't know exactly what it is yet, but we feel good about where we are. And look, so it's on to New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, and well beyond. We're in this for the long haul.
Vice President Joe Biden in Iowa last night. Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren wasted no time. She was in New Hampshire this morning in Manchester. She says her campaign is moving on and focusing on the Granite State.
When I left Iowa, I said it was too close to call, and it still is, but I feel good. It is good to be in New Hampshire. Our organizers are now leaving Iowa and going to the other places around the country where we are. We are in 31 states. We have more than 1,000 people on the ground. This is an organization that is built for the long haul.
Now it seems like the long haul might actually be quite long for Democratic presidential candidates. So if you are in New Hampshire or Nevada or South Carolina or Iowa. Let us know what you think about the shape of the Democratic presidential nomination now, given that we still don't know, as of this broadcast, who may have won in Iowa. Well, joining us now is Jennifer Victor. She is a professor of political science at George Mason University's Schar School of Policy and Government. She's with us from Fairfax, Virginia. Professor Victor, welcome to On Point.
Happy to be here.
So everyone for a while has been saying, not everyone, let me recount that. Some people for quite some time have been saying, should Iowa be first? Is it representative? Is it the best way to kick off a primary season? Well, now we kind of have a real-time experiment going on about what happens when Iowa isn't in the picture. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. In some ways, political scientists might kind of like that because we like when natural experiments happen. In a way, though, there are goods and bads to the Iowa caucuses and the way they work and the criticisms that they receive about not being representative and not really allowing for full participation from all citizens certainly have merit. And you could see that just from the caucus goers and as reporters were talking to people who didn't go to caucuses. On the other hand, the alternative is primaries, and it's not necessarily better, especially when we're talking about this candidate selection stage of the electoral process. With primaries, you don't get that interaction, that deliberation, that sort of polite discourse, and really importantly, that sense of community that you get from the Iowa caucuses that seemed to be so much on display last night. And those things are really key for democracy.
Now, when you say you don't get that interaction, you mean interaction between voters or interaction between voters and candidates?
Both, actually. So I think both are important parts. I mean, most voters don't expect to be able to interact with candidates unless you're an Iowan. So that is a particular point of privilege. And there's a long tradition in Iowa of taking that seriously and being particularly thoughtful about the process. Mm. I had the fortune of being able to attend an Iowa caucus last night here in Virginia. Mason was host to one of a dozen or so satellite caucuses that were being held around the country and the world for non-resident Iowans. And I was able to observe some of that where, you know, these folks from Iowa, many of whom were students, they showed up. Many of them had already made up their minds, but not all of them. And they had this really polite discourse. And some of them were trying to persuade one another. And it was just really a pleasure to watch.
Mm. Now, I think Granite State voters, though, New Hampshire voters might say that they get to have some pretty close contact with the candidates as well, being the first in the nation primary. But I take your point that if we had much larger blocks of primaries, multiple states at one time, such as we have on Super Tuesday, that would make it much harder for that intimate contact here. But Professor Victor, though, let me ask you. The common wisdom is that, or presumption is that Iowa matters because it might winnow down the field and give certain candidates mm-hmm. momentum as they move towards New Hampshire or right. Nevada or South Carolina. I mean, is that just not going to happen this time? Is the common wisdom falling apart?
Maybe a little bit. What's happening in Iowa is embarrassing, but it's probably not going to change the ultimate result of who the nominee is. We'll probably find out who the winner is before New Hampshire primary happens, but that result has a greater likelihood of kind of getting lost in the cacophony of the news cycle. We won't have this strong narrative that drives the campaign. And the risk that Iowa runs is that it's going to miss its window to have this public dramatic impact on the election as they had hoped.
Okay, there's one other thing I want to ask you as a political scientist. Does it not seem unwise in the year 2020 for any party to trust an untested digital app for something as important as this to give us information about how people vote or they think about their candidates? It just seems like an almost irresponsible thing for Democrats to do.
Yeah. So my perspective on that, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. But rather than pointing at finding whose heads should roll and who made the mistake and who developed an app that they never tested at scale or all of these things that could have gone wrong, my perspective on this is that to the extent we could have avoided this tragedy, as it were, that's going on in Iowa, it could have been avoided by having a centralized, coordinated system that could have run checks and developed backup plans. And in a healthy democracy, those functions are performed by a political party. And so the dysfunction that we're seeing now in the Iowa caucuses is, to me, just another symptom that political parties in the United States are, as organizations, too weak to serve their purpose in the democracy.
Interesting. Okay, so Professor Victor, stand by, because I want to bring in Aisha Moody Mills into the conversation. She's a Democratic political strategist, former executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus PAC, and a former regional finance director of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Amongst her many bona fides, Aisha Moody Mills, welcome back to On Point.
Glad to be here. Hi.
Okay, so how are you feeling about what went down in Iowa last night?
Well, I'm just annoyed that I was up all night even watching this hot mess go down. You know, Iowa has long been inconsequential and irrelevant to our political process because it is in no way, shape, or form reflective of the United States of America. 93% of caucus goers are white. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny state. And, you know, what's more, the number of delegates that actually come out of Iowa that are up for grabs, there's like 45 delegates that are up for grabs, which, again, is minuscule relative to the number of delegates that are up for grabs on, say, Super Tuesday or even the entire month of March. So the longstanding complaint that so many of us who are people of color, who are queer people, who are just reflective of and representative of the diversity of America, we've had lots of beef with the fact that Iowa has become a big cabal and so much political money and political capital are expended there to the detriment, I believe, of the Democrats actually investing in the base communities that matter in terms of taking back the White House. So really, you know, here we are with just yet another reminder that Iowa should get in the back of the line because the party certainly doesn't have the infrastructure to do what it needs to do. And frankly, we're also seeing this caucus structure itself be revealed as undemocratic, really, relative to just going out and casting a vote. This thing is kind of boiled down to what is a game of telephone and word of mouth of a popularity contest where people from all over the state are calling and, you know, saying, oh, yeah, well, 15 people raised their hand to support, you know, Amy Klobuchar. So, like, that counts as something. And frankly, that's not the way that our process should work. Transparently, inclusively, et cetera. So it's an epic fail. Sure, it's about an app and a piece of technology, but this is a bigger structural issue that so many of us have been talking about. And the fact that, you know, Iowa is kind of failing right now, I believe is an opportunity to re-up this conversation about why in the hell they're going first in the first place.
Well, Jennifer Victor, did you want to respond to that? I mean, that amongst in the minds of many Democrats, that is the question.
Yeah, and I definitely hear the frustration, and I'm quite sympathetic to that. And I think we're going to hear a lot more of that type of complaint and narrative. And in a way, I think that's kind of healthy. Sometimes we need crises to help create the impetus for institutional change that we might need to improve democratic systems. Of course, the risk that we run is that the changes we might make have the potential to make things worse rather than better. So I think it's really important to be thoughtful about how to improve the system. And I guess the other reaction I have is that we have the idea that the way to improve democracy is to make it more democratic, small d, democratic, like elections can fix everything. And the fact of the matter is elections are really flawed mechanisms for lots of reasons that we don't have the time to go into. But the idea that you can use an election to sort of divine or discover the majority will of the people is just a fantasy. Elections have problems related to campaign finance, related to the fact that voters are misinformed or uninformed, related to the fact that voters' preferences change and they may prefer multiple candidates. There's all sorts of reasons that elections can't actually fulfill this sort of democratic fantasy that we have.
Then what other option do we have, though?
Yeah, so in a democracy, the whole idea is that the people is where the sovereign power comes from, right? And so you need a mechanism like an election to use that sovereign power as that's the legitimizing mechanism. That's the whole point of how democracy works. But what we're looking at here is if you break this up into a two-stage process where you've got this candidate selection, where the parties are trying to pick their nominee, and then the general election, in reality, the system would probably work better if there was a little bit more centralized control by the parties at the selection stage, where the parties narrowed down the candidates more or relied more on the conventions or created conventions with delegates that had actual electoral accountability or some other serious responsibilities or something like that. There's lots of potential ways to improve the process, and none of them are perfect because there's this trade-off between having the legitimizing force of more participation and full participation and the need to have some control from a centralizing authority.
Okay, so Aisha, then let me lean on your experience as both a strategist and, you know, your executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus PAC, to Professor Victor's sort of underlying concern that there are weaknesses within the party system itself. And let's focus on the Democratic Party here in terms of their ability to be good stewards of these elections. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we saw play out in 2016 some of the weaknesses in the actual party structure, right? This is why the Bernie Sanders folks had a major revolt following 2016, and the DNC underwent some really significant rules changes, particularly around the way that superdelegates are used and used to have an outsized influence in choosing the candidate. There's also a whole challenge that was brought up in terms of the way that money flows to the party or doesn't. I mean, these parties are weak, or the Democratic Party specifically, because I want to clarify for everybody. Right now, the Republican Party has like twice the amount of money as the Democratic Party, maybe more. They are raising millions and millions of millions of dollars. They're probably going to get to like $1 billion over at the RNC. They are having a field day over there, and we can't keep up. And a part of why you see some of this structural breakdown that's happening at the state level is because there just aren't the resources there to really beef up and build. One of the critiques I have of a Tom Steyer and a Bloomberg, God bless them, they've done a lot of really great philanthropy, but we actually need them spending their billions of dollars not on vanity projects to promote themselves, but on that kind of party infrastructure building, if in fact they're saying we want to double down on the Democrats because we believe the Democrats are the future. So all of that, you know, is the backdrop of it. Mm. But here's the thing. The thing is that we're not going to fix any of that stuff tomorrow, and probably not, you know, in the next 10 years. So what I am particularly concerned about that we can fix is that the Democrats need to build a movement and a literal blue wave of people who are so jazzed up about the problems with the direction of this country and Donald Trump that we are just literally having a resist 2.0 that then people can get galvanized behind to get rid of the guy in the White House. We are so caught up in popularity contest and literally looking for another savior, right? Is it going to be Bernie Sanders? Is it going to be Elizabeth Warren? Or are those, like, you know, boring old people just going to retreat to a Joe Biden, which certainly isn't galvanizing at all? I believe that the biggest consequence right now for the party is that the party doesn't have a unifying, galvanizing message. Mm. There is no movement building right now to get rid of Donald Trump. And this, the one thing we do know, according to the Iowa Democratic Party about last night, is that turnout was expected to be flat and be about the same as 2016, which frankly is an epic fail. Because with when 2008, when Obama was running, turnout then was about 240,000 in the Iowa caucuses. Got down in 2016 to about 172. If we're only on par with where we were in 2016, then that shows that even in Iowa, voter Democrats are not particularly all that jazzed up about getting rid of Trump because they didn't even come out in mass to participate. And if this becomes a bellwether for the rest of the country, as Iowa has always claimed to be, then I am really, really, really concerned and nervous about the Democrats because there's clearly no galvanizing centralized message and energy that is creating a movement to bring people out against Trump.
Right.
And none of these candidates are going to be a Barack Obama. We will not see any kind of messiah-like figure in our lifetime. And so we cannot just allow ourselves to get caught in this cycle of looking for a God to come and save us because we are the only people who can save us. Mm. And unless we get riled up, We are out of luck.
Okay, so Jennifer Victor, I've got to let you go here in just about a minute, but respond to what Aisha said, and do you see perhaps that same concern about Aisha seeing actually a lack of excitement and turnout in Iowa? Is that something we should be watching for in New Hampshire in a couple of days?
Yeah, we're definitely going to want to keep an eye on it. And I agree with the analysis that Aisha provided. I would say that even though the turnout last night in Iowa was lower than expected, there's a lot of signals that suggest that turnout in 2020 is going to be really high. We're seeing much greater participation across the board in politics among young people, which is a population that historically doesn't participate that well in elections. And one of the things we know is that parties tend to turn out more, or voters tend to turn out more when they feel like their side has lost. And interestingly, in 2020, both sides feel like they've lost. Republicans feel like they lost because in 2018 they got clobbered by the Democrats, and Democrats feel like they've lost because of losing in 2016.
Well, Jennifer Victor, professor of political science at George Mason University's Schar School of Policy and Government, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to look ahead to New Hampshire and South Carolina as well. So Aisha Moody Mills, stand by. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about caucus chaos last night in the Iowa Democratic presidential caucuses. As of this broadcast, still no official result out of Iowa, even though the candidates are now focusing their attention on New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina as well. So if you're in any of those three states, give us a call. Does the lack of a result coming out of Iowa at this point in time, does it have any effect on how you're looking at the Democratic presidential candidates? Let's listen to a little bit of what the candidates did say as they were still waiting in Iowa last night. Here is Senator Amy Klobuchar speaking to her supporters.
You probably heard we don't know the results. But I did not want to let another minute go by without thanking all of you. We know there's delays, but we know one thing. We are punching above our weight.
Senator Amy Klobuchar. Now, here is what Andrew Yang said about the fact that he is still optimistic about his chances and building momentum for his campaign.
Are we done yet?
No!
No, we're going to go to New Hampshire. I'm going to be in the CNN town hall, the debate stage on Friday. The voting's going to start on the 11th. And then they're going to see that this campaign has just begun, and it is going to go all the way. Thank you, Iowa.
Andrew Yang last night in Iowa. Well, let's go to Ann, who's calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And is this Ann Solomon, who we've had on a couple of times?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Meghna. Libby and I, we had a very smooth running precinct caucus. When people came into the room, they went to sit where they, you know, their group they wanted. There were three of us in Cory Booker's lane. Libby did the count. We only had to count once.
Uh-huh.
People were already basically in their group, so they could take a quick head count and figure out if they were viable or not. Then we had 30 minutes to make sure people would disperse to their actual first preference. And Buttigieg actually was a couple people shy. So the nine people from Yang, I think, went over to Buttigieg.
And what did you do? That's really what we, like, America wants to know.
Well, for first preference, there were three of us for Cory Booker. And then for second, at one point then, I had three people talking to me saying, please come to our group. I went over to Amy Klobuchar and talked to them about comparing them to Buttigieg on whether or not people would support her in the general election. So I said, I will be in there for second, but for my second choice. But as it turned out, Biden's group was just barely shy of getting a second delegate. It was obvious Warren's going to get two delegates. Klobuchar is going to get two delegates. Biden, it was iffy. So I ended up helping out the Biden group so they could get two delegates.
Okay. That is not what I anticipated hearing you say, Anne.
It wasn't what I anticipated either, but I'm happy that Amy has – actually, Amy was our second strongest candidate in our precinct.
Okay.
And Buttigieg barely – and Bernie. Actually, Bernie's group was barely viable.
Yeah. Well, you know, so Anne, I want to definitely move our attention to New Hampshire here in just a second, but I have one more question for you.
Yes.
You've been hearing over the course of this hour, and I'm sure you, yes, and everyone in Iowa has heard overnight and this morning, people are asking, like, have Iowans given the Democratic Party every reason under the sun not to have the first caucus next time around? I mean, do you want to fight? You want to fight for your state here and its place in primary season?
Magna. It is emotionally draining. We are trying so hard. We feel the weight on this, and we take this so seriously. It is our civic duty to learn about these candidates and to grill them, and then to inform each other. We take it so seriously. But there is FUBAR here when we try to make this come up. I hope that there's an analysis done by the group. I know I already have suggestions for the state party on how they could make it go smoothly. I hope that we learn from this so that next time it is more smoothly on a statewide level. As I said, our precinct went very smoothly.
Yeah.
I'm going to send some suggestions to the state level.
Well, let's hope they listen. And thank you so much for calling us and for solving the mystery of who Anne Solomon ended up caucusing for. And we'll check back with you, I don't know, later on in the campaign season to see what you're thinking. But Anne Solomon, now officially an On Point regular from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Thank you, Anne. Aisha, let's refocus ourselves on New Hampshire here, because really, do you think that no matter what happens out of Iowa, that it's going to make a difference in New Hampshire, especially given your observation about the less than enthusiastic turnout that you're concerned about?
Yeah, I actually think that this hot mess in Iowa is going to to animate New Hampshire even more so. I think Bernie Sanders coming out with some, announcing his own preliminary results, which in my opinion, you know, he and Pete Buttigieg both started to do that, which, you know, just it didn't feel quite appropriate because they're not official. And it's like, oh, campaign claiming, oh, I'm winning, this is what I got, which isn't quite right. But given that Sanders going into New Hampshire was in the lead, I think that's definitely going to animate his folk and also others who, you know, it was expected. We anticipated coming out of Iowa that there wouldn't be any clear front runner. There was an anticipation that this could be a really unique season where three people could come out, maybe even the top four continue to be the top four because they would split the delegates. So if there are, I misspoke earlier, if there are 41 delegates in Iowa and, you know, you got to have 15%. In order to access them, you may end up with three or four people coming away with relatively similar amounts. So nothing would be resolved. And the expectation is that New Hampshire very much then would be another contest and kind of another day to fight it out. So
okay.
I think that, you know, it's just given fuel to that. Everyone was able to come out and declare themselves a victor. I mean, even, I think you just played the clip from Andrew Yang, and he's like, we're doing this. We're going to the end. Like, da, da, da. I mean, that's just going to boost momentum for folks and hopefully, you know, help would turn out in New Hampshire. But I just want to add again, New Hampshire is not a state that reflects the rest of America. And so when we get to Nevada caucuses, and then we actually get to South Carolina, primary, that's when the rubber will meet the road.
So I actually want to talk to some reporters in New Hampshire and South Carolina right now. And joining us from Manchester, New Hampshire, is James Pindle. He is WBUR's political analyst and a political reporter for the Boston Globe as well. James, great to have you on the show.
Great to be back on.
Our candidates crawling all over New Hampshire today. And like, how are they trying to spin what happened last night in Iowa?
You know, for the most part, they're ignoring it.
Okay.
It was with Pete Buttigieg earlier today. He didn't even mention the word Iowa, though he mentioned that he felt that the results enough did calm questions that he wasn't politically viable because he's so young. I do want to address one thing that Aisha said earlier in the show, which is just not true, that Iowa has long been inconsequential and irrelevant. I mean, it has been the path to the Democratic nomination for the last 20 years. It may be inconsequential and irrelevant this year. There's no arguing that. It was a weird week out that was out there. It's a weird week. But it has been, that's why there's been so much focus on it. Ever since Al Gore won, then John Kerry came back. Obviously, there would be no Barack Obama as president without Iowa. It has been a highly consequential state to the point where new folks here in New Hampshire have wondered, where do they fit in this process, particularly on the Democratic side. The Republican side, New Hampshire has always been more important than Iowa. But I've been wondering, where are all these visits? Why is all the attention in Iowa? But clearly, the ironic twist to all this is going to be that New Hampshire may matter more than it ever mattered in a while.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you a quick minute to respond to that, because I do want to hear more from James about what's happening in New Hampshire. But go ahead, Aisha.
Yeah. It's totally true that Iowa has been the pathway to victory. And that has always been problematic. So white people can feel good about it, and the fact that a handful of, you know, folks in the Midwest have gotten to decide, or at least, you know, kind of sway outcomes for everybody else. But as we have a new American majority that is growing in this country, the fact that that state continues to have such emphasis is in and of itself what is problematic and undemocratic. And for some, and I will say this, some people feel a little bit racially skewed. So sure, it has always mattered, but that doesn't mean that it should moving forward with the same weight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a different point that you made earlier, but I agree with what you said.
Okay. So James, we've got the New Hampshire primary coming up in a week, right? What's happening on the ground there? I mean, what candidates, if they can't use momentum at this point in time coming out of Iowa, what are they doing? What momentum do they have already in New Hampshire?
It's a great question because, you know, my general rule is I don't really pay that much attention. I'm Mr. New Hampshire primary, and I don't pay that much attention to polls in the last 2 weeks because it doesn't matter because, right, the table is supposed to be reset after what happens in Iowa, but now I guess we're going to have to dust off those polls because it doesn't really matter. Here's where the game is set. We had a latest tracking poll come out last night. The Boston Globe did with Suffolk University and WBZ, a channel in Boston, and it showed what was largely been happening for the last couple of weeks, which is Bernie Sanders does have a lead that is significant in a multi-candidate field. It's about 5 to 10%, depending on which poll you want to look at, but he is definitely in the lead. Joe Biden has emerged into second, which is something that is kind of a new thing since like the fall. And then you've got sort of a fight there between Warren and Buttigieg for third. And then after that, I think the interesting story is that while Klobuchar had something going on in Iowa, she had something a little bit going on in New Hampshire, but that has dropped off. Mm. It has dropped off for Yang and it's dropped off for Tulsi. Those folks were hanging around, you know, 6, 5, 6, 7%. And that this has really sort of dropped off. It's a four-person race with Bernie definitely on top.
Well, James Pindle, political reporter for the Boston Globe and WBUR political analyst, thank you so much for joining us, James.
Thanks for having me.
Let's quickly go to Weston, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Weston, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that Biden sees South Carolina as a firewall. But down here right now, I'm seeing that he's probably going to win on Obama's coattails, but he's not going to win by the margins that people are expecting. I think that Mayor Pete's going to do better down here than people think. And I don't think Bernie's going to do well down here, and it's going to reshuffle And then that'll set us up for going into Super Tuesday.
Right. Well, Weston, thank you for that from Charleston, South Carolina. So now let's turn to Gavin Jackson, who joins us from Columbia, South Carolina. He's a reporter for South Carolina Public Radio and host of South Carolina's ETV public affairs show, The Week in South Carolina. Gavin, it's good to have you back on the show.
Hey, Magna, good to hear you.
Okay, so what is happening down there in South Carolina?
So I hate to break it to everyone, but, you know, South Carolinians weren't expected to care about whatever happened in Iowa or take their cues from Iowa. So you can imagine now we really don't care about what's happening. But I will say that's a big, widely touted line that, you know, we're not going to take our cues from Iowa. We make our own decisions down here. But come on, everyone is still interested in finding out who has momentum, who is viable, and who's having a tough go of it. And I think Weston is kind of smart, wise what he's talking about there. We're talking about Joe Biden and, you know, him still having that firewall here. But we have seen Tom Steyer creeping into his lead. We have seen Steyer becoming more of a third place threat. And he can definitely start weighing on that momentum for Biden.
Steyer? Why?
Well, he's been investing a lot. He's been investing heavily with his ground game here. He's been advertising heavily with the black media companies and outlets, and he's been just really organizing well. And he's dominating the headlines here, Magna. I mean, we're talking about, you know, spending $14 million on, you know, airwaves here. He's on billboards. He's in people's mailboxes. People's kids know who Tom Steyer is because he pops up on their YouTube ads all the time. I mean, he's just saturating the market here, and he has that ability. But and it shows he's become a third place contender, and he's going to really start, you know, drawing on that moderate line now.
Okay,
and I think that's why he's one of the big winners from all this, and so is Biden, because we're not talking about, you know, how poorly they might have been doing in New Hampshire. We're instead talking about New Hampshire. How they didn't do in Iowa. We're talking about what they're going to do in New Hampshire now. So
right.
That focus is less talking about, oh, look how poorly these guys did there. Instead, we're like, oh, this seems like there's a status quo continuing right now.
So no bad news is good news in this case in South Carolina.
unless you're Pete Buttigieg.
Right.
In which case, because, yeah.
No, sorry, just forgive me for interrupting you there, Gavin, but there is something I wanted to ask you that Aisha brought up and that we've discussed many times here on the show when we've talked with you about South Carolina. And that is that, you know, to the point that in terms of the Democratic base, that both Iowa and New Hampshire may not be representative of the Democratic mm-hmm. base, whereas South Carolina absolutely is. And as we've discussed, there are South Carolinians who say the road to the presidential nomination runs through South Carolina. Okay.
Yes.
So now we've got this chaos in Iowa. We've got uncertainty for the next couple of days in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's making South Carolina even more important that, in fact, we could get Democrats could get the clarity they're seeking, but it's not going to be until February 29th?
Yeah, I think, you know, we always serve as that counterweight. That's the important fact that South Carolina provides because we have such a diverse electorate here. And kind of going back to what we were talking about with that Steyer support, you know, he has about, I think the most recent poll shows that he has 24% of black voters. Biden has 30%. This is someone, you know, Joe Biden has been in South Carolina before. He's been around. They know Joe Biden. So it's interesting to see that Steyer is making such inroads and surpassing Bernie Sanders, who has also been around South Carolina, though not to the extent of Joe Biden. So what kind of clarity we'll see in South Carolina? I don't know if that's going to be so definitive now, because when we do see a tighter race with Joe Biden, with Bernie Sanders, and everyone's in these mid-20s, I don't know if we're going to be providing that clarity. But at the same time, I want to kind of talk a little bit about what Iowa did here and that we're not getting that momentum, those headlines, that news cycle come out of Iowa, because this is the time when South Carolinians really start paying attention more. And while we don't take our cues from Iowa, we might hear more and more about what's happening because someone did well in Iowa or they're competing in strong second place. And we're not getting any of that today. So I guess maybe we'll see what happens in New Hampshire or what happens in this debate on Friday. But, you know, State of the Union's tonight, impeachment's on Wednesday. There's a debate on Friday. This news cycle is lost for these candidates. And it has to be incredibly devastating for those guys who are really hoping to springboard from Iowa to South Carolina, kind of like what, you know, Barack Obama did. But of course, no one is Barack Obama in this race.
Well, it seems as if one possibility is that the strongest candidate to come out of this week is President Donald Trump. So that's something worth thinking about. So Gavin Jackson, reporter for South Carolina Public Radio, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Magna.
And Aisha Moody Mills, Democratic political strategist with us from New York. Aisha, it's always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.